Thank you for the introduction. Hi, my name is Alex Kogan, and I'm here to present our work on compact numerable locks. So locks protect access to the shared data in the parallel software. They remain the most popular synchronization technique and, in fact, the topic of extensive research. And the reason for that is because it's pretty well known that performance of parallel software often depends on the efficiency of the locks it employs. Now, locks have been with us, I don't know, for 50 years, and they evolve with the evolution of computer architectures. So we live nowadays in the era of multi-socket, multi-node architectures with so-called NUMA effects, and we need numerable locks to perform well on those systems. So NUMA has been already introduced in the previous section. I'll briefly repeat what I mean by that here, because it's important for my talk as well. And I'll explain how lock designers exploit this NUMA effect to come up with efficient locks for those systems. So on a multi-node system, and here you can think about a node as a socket on a multi-socket machine, access by core to local memory or local cache located on the same node is faster than accesses to remote memory, remote cache that is located on a different node. And this is what's called NUMA, or non-uniform memory access effect. Now, even if your system has a single socket, it might be configured in NUMA on a die where access to a certain memory or certain cache can be faster than another memory. But if you have multiple sockets, pretty much you're guaranteed to have those NUMA effects. So in order to exploit this, this effect, lock designers came up with the idea of, trying to keep the lock ownership on the same node. Okay, and this decreases the number of remote cache misses. It decreases the inter-socket communication, both on the access to the shared state of the lock and to the access on the access to the data that threads access and modify in their critical sections protected by the lock. And it results in a really good performance under contention compared to NUMA oblivious locks. Now, it's important to know that numerable locks are unfair over the short term, so they trade off short-term fairness for better performance because they modify essentially the admission order of threads into their critical sections. So how do they achieve that? How do numerable locks keep the lock on the same node? Well, virtually all numerable locks employ the same idea of using some kind of hierarchy. In most cases, we have, two layers of hierarchy. Some numerable locks have more than two. And the idea that we have on the low level, we have intra-node locks that we first try to acquire. And then when we keep this intra-node lock, we compete over the lock at the root of the hierarchy. And the root lock stays locked by threads running on the same socket or same node. And we pass the high-level numerable lock that we are trying to implement by passing the intra-node lock between threads running on the same node. Okay, so this idea works really well in practice. However, it has several pitfalls. Well, first of all, acquisition path is longer. And in particular, we have to execute multiple atomic instructions to acquire those multiple low-level locks on our acquisition path. And this results poor performance, relatively poor performance under low contention, or in particular when we have only single thread executing our system. Now the second drawback is that those hierarchical numerable locks require dynamic initialization to ensure portability, because we really don't know how many NUMA domains we would have until we actually run our software on a particular machine. And this might be an issue for certain applications that we essentially disallow static initialization of locks. But also, there is another related issue that the lack of standard APIs to query topology of the underlying machine actually hinders portability of those locks. But the most critical part in those hierarchical numerable locks is their size. And the size has to be proportional to the number of nodes. So if we have, for example, two socket machine, we need three essentially cache lines to implement the lock on a four-socket machine, we need 5 cache lines. And I'm speaking in cache lines and not just words, because we essentially need to allocate the entire cache line per lock, per low-level lock, so that we avoid the fault sharing on the access to those locks. So those are pretty big structures compared to, say, NUMA oblivious locks that we can implement with just one word or even one bit. So where and why the size matters? Of course, if we have an application that uses just one lock, we don't really care if we use the, I don't know, 3 or 5 or 7 cache lines instead of just one word. But of course, on systems that have millions or even more of those locks, this becomes really important. So think about databases or Linux kernel, for example, that, as we know from the previous talk, use one lock per file, right? So spin locks in the Linux kernels are embedded in every inode and every page structure, which correspond to every file on the system or every page frame on the system. So once we increase the number of files or increase the amount of memory available on the machine, we can easily go from a well-balanced workload to the one that cannot fit, the working set cannot fit entirely in the memory of the machine. So this is why Linux kernel places a strict limit of 4 bytes on the spin lock size. So another example is concurrent data structures that use one lock per node or one lock per entry. For example, binary search trees, linked lists, some hash tables. So if those data structures are used to maintain multiple nodes going from one word of memory per lock to multiple cache lines per log becomes a really big issue. So here we introduce CNA, which stands for Compact NUMA Error Log, which essentially takes care of all those pitfalls. So first, it requires only one word of memory, regardless of the machine on which we execute our program. It's a variant of another very popular but NUMA oblivious MCS lock, and so it inherits its performance features such as local spinning and one atomic operation per acquisition. So in particular, it performs on par with MCS under no contention, but it performs on par with state-of-the-art hierarchical NUMA aware locks when contended, even though it consumes much less memory. So after introducing NUMA aware locks, I'll give you a brief background on the MCS lock, talk about the design of CNA, talk briefly about performance evaluation, and finally conclude the talk. So MCS stands after its inventors, Mel, Crummy, and Scott, and the idea in MCS is to organize waiting threads in a FIFO queue. So each shared, the shared state is a pointer to the tail of the queue. So we have just one word of memory containing the tail of the queue, and each thread has a record that it inserts into the queue and then spins locally on a flag, so-called spin flag, inside the record. So the spin flag can take values of 0, 1, and the value of 0 means that we are waiting and spinning and waiting for the value to change so that we can acquire the lock and execute our critical section. So let's assume we have some thread that wants to acquire the lock. It will swap the tail of the shared queue with the pointer to its own record, and this is the only atomic instruction on the acquisition path, and it will enter the queue of waiting threads and spin and wait until the spin flag will change to 1. And this is how we release the lock and pass it to the next thread. In the MCS lock, we simply take our successor in the queue and update its spin flag, write the value of 1 into the flag. So let's see how CNA modifies those characteristics. So first of all, it organizes waiting threads into 2 queue rather than 1, so-called main and secondary queue. The shared state is still just one pointer to the tail of the main queue. Each thread has a record that it inserts into the main queue and then spins locally on a flag inside the record. Sounds familiar, and indeed, the lock operation of the CNA lock is pretty much the same as the MCS one. Now, the unlock operation is where those two differ substantially. In CNA, the lock is passed to the queue successor running on the same node as the lock holder. And waiting threads between the lock holder and its successor are moved to the secondary queue so they don't interfere in subsequent lock handovers. So let me help you to process this information by this running example of how CNA works in practice. Okay, before that, let me note that the numbers at the back of the threads are for demonstration purposes only, so we don't use any thread IDs or anything like that in our implementation. And the colors here code essentially the nodes, the NUMA nodes, NUMA domains on which threads are running. So let me assume that we have a system with two NUMA nodes, red ones and blue ones. Okay, and finally, I will note that the queue nodes in CNA contain a few additional bits of information compared to MCS. Okay, for example, we store the node ID on which the thread is running in the node in CNA. But the memory size of queue nodes is never a practical concern because, well, we usually have a constant number of those nodes allocated per thread or per core, and they can be reused between different lock acquisitions and different locks. And in fact, in the paper, we describe an optimization where we can essentially eliminate those additional bits and embed them in other pieces of data that we store. But we do that mostly for performance reasons and not for memory consumption. So we have here the main queue of two waiting threads, number two and three, and thread number one is holding the lock. So let's assume that just as before, thread number four shows up, it wants to acquire the lock. So it will swap the tail pointer again and join the main queue. The secondary queue is empty, by the way, so it's not shown here. Okay, so at some point, thread number one is done with its critical section. It wants to unlock the lock. So this is where the action begins. It will scan the main queue and search for another blue node. Okay, it will find thread number three here and move thread number two, which is a thread running on a different NUMA node, it will move it to the secondary queue and pass the lock to thread number three. So when all is said and done, we'll have a secondary queue with only one thread here, thread number two, thread number three holding the lock, and note that now the spin flag is actually a spin field that can take values of 0, 1, and a pointer to the secondary queue. Okay, so we essentially reuse this spin field to pass the information where the secondary queue is located. All right, so our system keeps running. More threads arrive and they want to acquire the lock. Perhaps the same thread number one that we have seen before joins again. And when thread number three is done with the critical section, once again, it will scan the main queue, will find thread number five running the same socket. It will move thread number four to the end of the secondary queue. Okay, so this is how the queues would look like once thread number three passes the lock to thread number five. All right, so again, our system keeps running, and let's assume that at some point we have thread number one holding the lock, and we don't have any other blue thread waiting in the main queue. So we scan the main queue, we don't find any blue thread, so we will move threads from the secondary queue to the top of the main queue and pass the lock essentially to thread number two in this case. Okay, so once thread number one is done, this is how main queue would look like. Secondary queue is empty again, and the system goes on. So far, I told you that we move waiting threads back from the secondary queue into the main queue when the main queue is empty or when it doesn't have threads running on the same socket or same node as the lock holder, right? But doing just that would essentially introduce starvation, since if threads running on the same node as the lock holder would keep arriving, we would keep the lock continuously on the same node and starve all the other threads in the secondary queue. So to avoid that, we also move threads from the secondary queue to the main queue after a certain number of intra-socket handovers. Now, we calculate this number probabilistically. So basically what we do, we scan the main queue with high probability rather than always. And I'll just know that we can count deterministically as well, but it will incur more overhead as we will pay essentially cache misses to read this counter and update it on every log handover. Now, this number of intra-socket handovers presents a threshold that controls the fairness versus throughput trade-off, essentially the same trade-off that every other numerable log has. Right, so the basic implementation of CNA is amenable to a number of optimizations. They all can be found in our paper, but I'll here mention one that I find interesting, so-called shuffle reduction optimization. So what happens is that under light contention, waiting threads can be moved back and forth between the main and secondary queue. Right, so it will create the overhead of the shuffling, but without reaping the benefit of locality, because the threads wouldn't stay long enough in the secondary queue, and we would continuously move them back and forth between those two queues. So the solution is, when the secondary queue is empty, we will scan the main queue with low probability rather than always. So what it will do, it will reduce the amount of unnecessary shuffling when the contention is low, because in those cases, the secondary queue is likely to be empty, while it would respond fast enough when the contention is high, because in those cases, the secondary queue is likely to be non-empty, and so this optimization wouldn't have any impact, which is as required in this case. So let me show a few results from our performance evaluation. So we evaluated CNA both in user space and kernel space. In the user space, we implemented CNA as a user-level library conforming to the POSIX PSET interface. We compared to MCS and to a few state-of-the-art numerable hierarchical locks. In the kernel space, we implemented CNA, integrated it into the slow path of QSpinLock. So QSpinLock is a spinlock implementation in the Linux kernel, which is kind of interesting. It has two paths. The fast path is implemented using a simple test and set lock, and the slow path is essentially an MCS lock. So we replace the MCS lock, the slow path part, with the CNA. And we run experiments on multiple systems. I'll talk about some results from a four-socket machine, x86-based machine with 18 hyper-threaded cores per socket. So this is here is a result from one of the LevelDB experiments. So we can see that under high thread count, the CNA log, the orange line here, performs pretty much the same as another hierarchical numerable lock and beats the other numerable lock that we compared to. And it's twice as fast in terms of throughput as the MCS log, the black line here. Looking at the single thread performance, we can see that CNA is the only log to measure the performance of MCS and performs better than other numerable logs. Now, we do have a region here between 2 and 8 threads, interestingly, where the CNA logs lags behind MCS. And this is exactly the area of low contention that I talked about before, and where the shuffle reduction optimization really helps to get rid of this slowdown. Okay. So same results, essentially, qualitatively same results we get from the kernel space experiments where using CNA and the slow path of the Q-spin lock results in a speed up of around 100% compared to the stock version. So let me conclude my talk and summarize it by saying that CNA essentially achieves the best of both worlds in terms of space efficiency as the MCS lock and performance as hierarchical numerable locks. In the paper, we show some details that the good performance of CNA comes from the reduced number of remote cache misses compared to MCS, while preserving long-term fairness and essentially not having starvation issues. One final point is that the Linux kernel patch is publicly available, and in fact, we are working these days with the kernel community to push the CNA implementation into the kernel. So Thank you so much, and I'll be happy to take your questions.
Gilles Muller, INRIA. MCS is quite outdated in terms of lock. Have you done any comparison with locks that are based on delegation, such as the remote core locking?
Well, MCS still remains very popular in the systems community. In fact, Linux kernel just 4 years ago switched from ticket lock to using some combination of MCS with some other stuff.
But in terms of performance, it's absolutely outdated.
Right.
There are a bunch of studies that appear these recent years that does much better than MCS.
Right. So
and even in the Linux kernel, there's an ATC paper on that 2 years ago.
Right. So we did compare to I think state of the art numerable locks, right, which are non-MCS locks, and the performance was on par with those locks.
All right, let's thank the speaker again.